Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. Visualize Guatemala. In my case, I couldn't. I had to look it up. A mountainous nation of 16 million, it occupies 42,000 square miles, or roughly 30% the area of Montana, on the peninsula south of Mexico. For the first half of the 20th century, its dictators answered to the United Fruit Company. In 1954, an elected president was toppled in a CIA-engineered coup. After decades of civil war, the government today is democratic. But the economy struggles. According to the CIA World Factbook, 56% of the people live in poverty. Medical care reflects that harsh reality. Overall, one doctor per 1,000 citizens. But as in every hard living place, there are lights of hope and help. One is the Clínica Mexeña, jointly operated since 1966 by the Catholic Church Diocese in Guatemala and Montana. Born in Butte, Sheila McShane directs the clinic. Sheila, many thanks for joining us on Home Ground. I mentioned you grew up in Butte. Tell us about your folks.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to share with our listeners. My name is Sheila, and I'm a daughter of a Butte miner who came from Donegal, Ireland in the 1920s. And my mother is also from County Cork, Ireland, and she also came approximately around the same time. They came separately. They didn't know each other. And my mother went to her two sisters in Boston and then out to Butte to look for a few good Irishmen to marry.
And found one.
And my mother found my dad. The other two sisters didn't, and they went back to Boston.
And tell us a little bit about growing up in Butte. What stands out for you looking back?
Butte is a very friendly city. It's a very Irish city and also a city of other nationalities and cultures. It's a very rich city. In the area where I was born, up on North Main Street near the mine, it was a rather poor area. It was very heavily populated by miners. And I grew up in a relatively low middle class home. My parents just had third grade primary education. My dad came to Butte when he was 18. Hmm. He died. He worked all his life in the copper mines. And he died in the Mountain Con mine when I was 17 years old.
You say your dad had a third-grade education, but you went to Carroll College, correct?
That's correct.
How did that come about?
Both my parents did not have the opportunity to go to school when they were in Ireland. They were both from very poor families. Both my grandfathers were Irish fishermen. Because also the Anaconda Company in Montana helped with our scholarship to Carroll College.
I'm unfamiliar with that scholarship program. Was it typical, common?
It was not a full scholarship, but it was typical. Mm-hmm.
If I was to ask you who was Sheila when she went away to college, what her most important values were then, what would you say looking back?
I would say even in those years, the most important part of my life was my faith. I grew up in a very Catholic home. We said the family rosary every day, and my mother went to Mass every morning. My father got down on his knees and said the Hail Mary when he got up to go to work. So we were a very Catholic family.
What did you study at Carroll?
I studied nursing, and my older sister Marie is also a registered nurse, so I did study nursing, and I'm sure I was influenced by my sister.
Graduated when?
I graduated in 1964 from Carroll College.
And when did you get to Guatemala and begin working on the clinic?
I arrived in, our mission of Guatemala was founded in 1964 by Archbishop Hunthausen. And I went in 1966. At the time when I decided in graduating, I knew before I was out of college that I wanted to go to the missions. I was not aware that we had our own mission. And so I looked into the Extension magazine, and they called me and said, you have a mission in your own diocese. Why don't you call them? And that's how I got in connected with the Diocese of Helena, Guatemala mission.
What was the mission?
The missions of the Catholic Church in those years were started because the Pope asked for 10% of American priests to go to Latin America. Archbishop Hunthausen was one of the priests, one of the bishops who responded to that request. And Guatemala we chose because Spokane, Washington also was in Guatemala. So that's how the mission started in 1964 by Archbishop Hunthausen.
Okay, but again, I'm asking, what is the mission? One might be converting people to Christianity. One might be medical care. What was the mission that you signed on to? Did it have a definition at that time, a goal, a purpose?
I believe the missions at that time really was to assist the country in the religion and our Catholic faith, because in those years there were practically no Latin American priests. And so the idea of mission was not just sharing of faith, but also sharing social justice. And we were very aware that when we left, that we were going down there to start a mission that would serve all the needs of the people, not just their faith.
Okay, so now you end up heading a clinic. We're talking 51 years later. Tell us how the clinic itself was established.
Since the priests went in 1964, they were extremely overwhelmed by the amount of sick people that were approaching them for help as they had just arrived in the country. So they knew they had to do something about health facilities within the mission complex. And so right away they wrote to the Diocese of Helena requesting medical personnel, volunteers, to come and join them, and the priest was going to build the clinic.
When did you arrive in Guatemala?
I arrived mid-1966. I believe it was the month of April.
And where this clinic now stands, were you involved in its actual construction? Did you witness it being built?
Yes, I did. I was there when I arrived. There was no clinic. There was just the mission buildings, which were the main constructor was the pastor. He is from Power, Montana. And he built all the mission buildings that are still standing.
And the clinic itself?
The clinic itself that now stands was previously the rectory, but it was converted into the clinic because the other clinic that was also built in 1966 had to be replaced because it was falling. Our mission was built on coffee plantation land, and so it was filled land. And the clinic was down on the road, and it looked like it was going to fail.
Let's get this in real time. You're in your early 20s. You spent your life in Montana. You end up in the mountains of Guatemala. What do you see and what do you think?
I believe when we first arrived there, we were completely overwhelmed by the poverty.
What does that mean?
The people were barefoot. They were obviously very sick. We had a lot of tuberculosis, malnutrition, a lot of childhood diseases, measles, whooping cough, pneumonias. So there was a lot of young deaths, and the age people were dying was much very young. And there was no medical assistance in those years for none of the people in our area. We chose where we have the Clinica Machena because it was the only town, the only area where there was light, electricity. And we were on the base of all the mountain villages. And all the mountain villages actually belonged to another state, but they were only 2 kilometers away from us. And they had no light.
So you had electric power, and that was a key reason.
That was a key reason why we chose the area where we chose to put the clinic.
Okay. Now, Butte, Montana is known as a tough town economically over time, even though there are a lot of riches that came out of the ground. You see this poverty dramatically, as you've just expressed it. What's your emotional response?
I believe our emotional response is we want to help and we can make a difference. And so we were young, but we were, I think, good friends to each other. We had a good team spirit, and so.
When you say we, who's we?
I went down with another registered nurse, and there were two of us with an organization called Papal Volunteers for Latin America.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're talking with Sheila McShane, director of the Clinica Machena in Guatemala. Back to the team, how many members?
At the time we joined them, there were 4 priests and myself and the other volunteer.
And how many of them are medically trained?
Just myself and the other nurse.
How many people in the immediate vicinity who might want help for medical problems, roughly speaking? Hundreds? Thousands?
I would say thousands.
Okay, 2 people, medically trained, thousands of people needing serious help. Someone might just say, I'm out of here. What did you say?
Actually, in those years when we were all beginning missions, because it wasn't just us, there were some other missions coordinating with us too, and we had a lot of friendship between the other missionaries, and we went with to their see their clinics. We went and shared with them. So there was a kind of a spirit among the missionaries at those beginning years that helped each other. And so that helped us get a foot on the ground and also to know what other people were doing, what we would do. And so.
Okay, you've got team spirit. You've got professional expertise in terms of two people. How are you doing for equipment and supplies?
Equipment and supplies were very scarce. In those beginning years, the priest, who was also the constructor, was able to construct the clinic, and he had some supplies coming from Catholic Relief, and so we did get some supplies through Catholic Relief, but in those years they were sample medicines, and we had minimal equipment in our clinic.
Okay, I'm going to surmise then that with minimal staffing and minimal equipment and thousands of people needing help, the success rate may not have been too high. Is that a mistaken assumption? In other words, if people need medical treatment and you don't have the medicine, what happens?
Well, I think in those beginning years, it was overwhelming, the amount of disease, the amount of death that we were surrounded by. And also in those beginning years, the first nurse who came down with me left after the first couple years. And so there were oncoming volunteers that were changing and bringing new ideas and also bringing new support.
All right, let's take a snapshot. 10 years later, what's changed?
I would say what has changed in 10 years was there was more assistance coming from the government. When we first came down, we were the only professional help. And as years went on, the government clinics were becoming more organized also.
This is the Guatemalan government.
The Guatemala government, health ministry of the Guatemala government also had small clinics. Our clinic was always bigger, more well-equipped, and more medication.
All right, so they've come on board. They're providing some services. 10 years down the road, what's the health situation with the population as compared to when you arrived?
I think the health situation is slightly improved. We are beginning to get vaccinations for the communicable diseases. The Ministry of Health is taking a little bit more control of tuberculosis, and so we're getting more support on some programs. And that did also help us.
From the notes your office gave me, you left in 83. So we're at 1976 now, after the first 10-year period. What happens in that 7-year period in terms of your medical capacity?
Our medical capacity in our clinic was affected by the internal armed struggle that began probably in about 1979 to really start to form and build up.
Sort of
up.
A civil war?
A civil war, uh-huh.
Okay, so help us understand how that affected your medical work.
It definitely affected our medical work because there was a great sense of fear around us, and military presence was coming and going in our area, and the government clinics and hospitals too were more controlled because there were wounded people arriving. We were getting wounded people in our clinic. We were always one who we accepted whoever came to us. We never questioned who they were.
Or which side they were on, for example.
That's correct.
Okay. So that doesn't sound like progress. That sounds like all of a sudden you got a new set of problems.
Those problems were very serious in those years, but by that time we were a little bit more stronger because we did have medical students with us, and they were able to give us more professional help. And we also had health promoters that we had trained. We were working with midwives. So we were working a lot more with the local population as far as expanding our program, because the needs were very great. And so we did have preventative health promoters started in the late 1960s with another nurse from Butte who was also Sheila. And she was the one who really did a lot to start the health promoters.
We'll talk about health prevention as part of your program in a minute. Getting back to the situation, you mentioned, I believe, midwives. Prior to that time, how were babies delivered?
Babies in the Mayan culture, in the mountain villages, were always delivered by midwives. And midwives was considered a vocation by the Mayan women. They felt a calling themselves, and they became midwives.
So you felt as a professional the quality of maternal care during birth was what on a scale of 1 to 10?
I would say less than 5. Very poor. However, the situation of the midwives who became midwives just because they sensed this calling was very minimal because they had no equipment, no prior teaching, and their techniques were very frightening. And so we saw a lot of tetanus with babies because they had no equipment.
The notes indicate, again, you left in 1983. So here you've been there since 1966. You've seen 17 years of someone might call hellish human conditions and health conditions. Did you ever have moments of doubt of yourself or of your faith?
I can honestly say I probably didn't have doubts. I felt strengthened. I felt strengthened by the faith of the people and their gratitude for what we were doing and what we were trying to do. And there were different organizations, too, international organizations that were coming down. We were getting some international assistance by that time. The Swedish private organization was financially giving our clinic a fair amount of money, and they continue to this day to give us some financial support each year. And they're Swedish businessmen. So we did have help coming in.
And that gave you... I'm asking you a personal
question. That gave
us
hope. We knew we weren't alone. We knew that we were in a effort with many people around us supporting us and giving us advice.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We are talking with Sheila McShane, who directs the Clinica Mexena in Guatemala. You have a sense of hope. You're getting more support despite the terrible conditions you continue to work in. You leave in 1983. Why?
I had to leave in 1983 because it became known that our clinic was treating both sides. So we were treating the opposition, which would be the guerrilla movement, the guerrillas. We treated whoever came to our clinic.
Yeah.
And it became known. And so we knew, and some of our health promoters in the mountain villages were apparently involved with this struggle. And so we were kind of pinpointed, some of our workers, not our workers, but our promoters in the mountain villages were pinpointed. And so I was pinpointed because they knew that they were coming to the clinic. And so I left not only for my own safety, but for the safety of the other missionaries, because it was known that some of my health promoters in the villages were captured and that I would probably be in more danger and that I should leave as a precaution.
So you leave Guatemala, then what?
I left Guatemala, and because I did have some contacts in Mexico City, I went to Mexico City. And I stayed in Mexico. First I went back to Montana because I was fleeing the country, fleeing the mission, and I had to report to my bishop. So I did come to Montana, and I still had a great desire to be with the people. And the bishop at that time agreed if I could find another bishop to support me in Mexico, I could return to Mexico to be with the people who were fleeing Guatemala.
So you did that?
I went back to Chiapas, Mexico. Almost maybe 2 or 3 months after I was in Montana, I went back.
And how long were you in Mexico?
I was in Chiapas for 8 months. So I stayed in with the refugees for 8 months, and then I decided it was time to go home, so I returned to Montana. And I returned to Helena, Montana, and I started working in my nursing profession in Helena, and got an apartment, got a car, got help, and thought I was going to be there forever. I thought I left in a time of turmoil, and I knew I left because I was pinpointed. So I never thought I would return.
All right, now let's just pause a second. You're back home in Montana. You were beginning to lead what someone might say a normal Montana life. What was your emotional response to the change?
In Montana, I found it a bit difficult because there wasn't a lot of people, solidarity people around me, people who were also involved with the struggles of Central America. So I decided to move to Seattle. So after 3 years in Helena, Montana, I moved to Seattle, Washington.
So you still felt the need to be part of this effort? I'll call it a social justice calling.
Yes, I was very much still very involved with it. I was in contact with people in Central America, and I knew that there were solidarity groups in Seattle, and I went to Seattle to be, and also to finish, continue on in my nursing career. So I stayed in Seattle, 20 years. I worked in my nursing profession, and I also was in contact with many Guatemalans and people who worked with Guatemala's Solidarity Movement.
And then?
And then it became apparent that the sister who was, took my position was going to resign, and she was looking for someone. I went to visit in 2005. That was the first visit back to Guatemala, as the peace accords were signed in 1996.
Ending the Civil War.
Ending the Civil War and making a pot. Many people were then returning, so I knew I could safely return. So I decided I did want to go back and visit, so I went back in 2005. And when I went back, the sister who was in charge of the clinic then and had been since 1986 said she wanted to retire and would I be interested, and I said yes.
Interested in resuming directorship
returning to Guatemala. Mm-hmm.
But resuming the directorship of the clinic.
Yes.
You say the Peace Corps had been assigned a decade before you resumed directorship. What was the situation like that you found compared with when you left, in and around the clinic, the health of the people, et cetera?
I came back to a very changed condition, a very advanced clinic. A much larger clinic because we had been accepted to receive a project from Spain, and so we then had 50 workers.
Holy smokes, from two originally to 50.
Yes, we had 50 workers. Half of them were workers of the clinic in Machena. The other half were working mountain clinics, which was a project of Spain.
And how about the health of the people?
There definitely was an improvement of the health of the people. One of the realities were there were a lot more medical personnel available. The government health clinics were more in different communities. There were some more government health clinics. And the Spanish project put a lot of, we had seven mountain clinics under our care with the Spanish Medica Mundi project.
And how did you feel sort of coming home? I mean, you obviously devoted a tremendous amount of your passion and heart to that work. How was it coming back?
It really was wonderful to come back and wonderful to be there. The sister who had been 20 years in the position stayed still retired at the mission, so she was there also. But I was in complete control again of the clinic, and there definitely were a lot of workers. There was a lot being done, and so we saw more health improvements.
Let me read your current mission statement. We're 2015, so it's 9 years after you return. Our mission is to promote and defend life, holistic health for all, to live peacefully with the environment. I want to break that down. The first description under that, curative and preventative health care. What does that mean?
In those years, because we were well aware that we had to work on the preventative side, we did have not just vaccines, but we had to prepare people to understand what was happening in the environment, what was happening in the hospitals, what was happening. We did family planning was definitely in the area and is still in the area. That was a government program, and it still maintains a government program. Tuberculosis is a government program, so there are certain programs that are completely under control of the government. And ours was always preventative, but definitely always aimed at the Mayan culture. And so we had a lot of preventative health care for the environment, for babies, for nutrition. Right now, preventative health care for babies has become a greater reality because there is so much more malnutrition. We do have a nutrition project. We have many mothers who don't have breast milk that we have to provide formula for. We make our own nutritive drink. We do have medicinal plants. We have a large medicinal plant project that goes back 20 years also. And so we have such things as a medicinal plant that helps the mother's breast milk come. We do work with medicinal plants. We work very much with the Mayan culture.
So in other words, this is preventative nutritional care assistance promotion, with the idea of preventing infant mortality, infant disease. Fair?
Fair. Mm-hmm. Improving it.
It says here you have an environmental project. What does that mean in concrete terms?
In concrete terms, the emphasis that we had mostly on our environmental program was O'Neill stoves and also water projects. The O'Neill stoves do have a chimney. They cost about $100 each, and they use very little firewood. You can use twigs from a tree.
The benefit of having a chimney for health is what?
The chimney benefits the child, the whole family, because there's no smoke in the house, and less firewood used, which is also economic.
You mentioned there's still significant malnutrition among the people you serve, correct?
I would say there's more malnutrition right now.
Your Pope Francis has articulated more than once his call for developing a human-centered moral economy to address things like malnutrition and unemployment. As a Catholic, stepping back now from your medical role, although you see the consequences in your medical role of malnutrition, what's your sense for that emphasis on not taking away from charitable care, but talking about systemic change to help alleviate the need for that care? How do you feel about that?
I think systemic change is very necessary because we cannot be the solution to the problem. The problem has to be solved. Within cultures and within countries and worldwide, we have to take care more of each other, and there has to be more justice, and we as developed nations have to be aware of the need in other countries, and we often are the cause of a lot of the injustice that happens in other countries with economies because we also exploit. One of the biggest problems is medical companies, pharmaceuticals, that are American pharmaceuticals all over the world, and medicine is extremely exploitive.
You mean too expensive?
Too expensive. The profit of pharmaceuticals is extreme.
If people want to help your clinic, how do they do it?
Help for our clinic is through the Diocese of Helena, Montana. We continue to be a mission of this diocese, and we have a website that is www.diocesehelena.org. And you state that you're sending a donation for the Clinica Machenia. And you can send a check also to P.O. Box 1729, Guatemala Mission, Diocese of Helena, 59624. You can also follow us, and I urge you to follow us on Facebook. It's Clinica, C-L-I-N-I-C-A, capital M-A-X-E-N-A. Thank you very much.
Sheila McShane, I very much regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground. And to our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.